Hey everybody, this is Sophie and welcome to episode 102 of the Big Boo Cast. This week, Melanie and I are going to talk a little bit about clothes. I have a Hazel story that I'm going to share, and we also recap some of our favorite pop culture milestones. So stick around for that in just a minute. Before we get to all that though, I want to talk to you for just a little bit about Easy Kicks. Now, if you have ever dealt with children, you know that they tend to grow out of their shoes really quickly, and they can be really tough on those shoes. And also, they want the latest and the greatest shoes. It can be a little bit of a handle if you're a person who provides for those children and you are trying to keep up with all of their shoe needs. Well, with Easy Kicks, kids can wear their shoes as long as they want. And once they are worn out or too small, or they just want a new style, you can send back those shoes in a prepaid shipping envelope, and then Easy Kicks will donate those shoes to their nonprofit partners. You can send the shoes back in any condition, dirty, wrecked, full of holes. So the shoes you send back are donated to nonprofit organizations. In great condition, they're sent to foster kids in need, and if they're wrecked, they're recycled through Nike Grind. Each shipment comes in a personalized box with fun stickers and other club features for your kids, and it's only $20 a month per child. There are no limits to how often you can swap for a new pair. And as an official partner of Nike, Easy Kicks releases a new style each week, no catches, no hidden fees, and you can cancel anytime. So if you would like to take a whole new approach to providing shoes for your kids, that can keep pace with how quickly they grow and how often they need new shoes, visit easykicks.com/join now to sign up and use the discount code EASYLISTEN, that's the letter E, the letter Z, and the word listen, at checkout for $5 off your first month in the club. easykicks.com/join now to sign up and use the discount code EASYLISTEN at checkout for $5 off your first month in the club. Alrighty, here comes episode 102. We are so glad you're with us. Hey everybody, this is Sophie. This is Big Mama.
Hey, it's Melanie. It's Big Mama.
Okay, I have a story to tell.
I can't wait.
Well, I don't want it to be disappointing, but we've spoken, and we have a theme for this podcast. We have some specific information we want to cover, but first, I feel like I need to share this because y'all are invested. So we've had many discussions about Hazel. You know, she's not easy. She's very anxious, and
yes.
Anyway, for the last little bit, she's kind of been hobbling. Like she's not wanting to put any weight on her back right foot. And so initially we just thought that she had, you know, rubbed her paw when she was walking or gotten something stuck in it or it would get better. But over the last couple of weeks, she's also had a skin condition that's gotten worse.
And,
and she's had trouble walking. So we were like, well, she needs to go to the vet.
Yeah.
So I made her an appointment. Well, she had been to the vet for the skin stuff, but it has not gotten better. I should say that. Like we didn't just ignore her.
Okay.
So I made an appointment. I took her to the vet Tuesday. I took a video while I was stopped on the way to. I was going to post it, and then I decided not to because I didn't want to embarrass Hazel. But she barked. From the time we left the house until we got to the vet. Now, granted, it's not a super long distance, but it's long enough so that it's if a creature is barking nonstop, you might be a little nervous by the time you get there.
Yeah.
And so we go back into the room. Anyway, long story short about that part. She would not let anybody touch her except for me. Mm-hmm. She would not let the vet touch her. She would not let the vet tech touch her.
Mm-hmm.
And then she was getting so anxious that the vet said, tell you what, I'm going to give you a couple of tranquilizers. Mm-hmm. And, why don't you just bring her back tomorrow and drop her off?
Okay. Okay.
So I said, okay, we can do that. So he gave me the tranquilizers. He said, give them to her in the morning, like long before you're getting ready to leave, before she has a clue that she's, you know, going to go somewhere.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I did. I knew from the time that we started to get in the car that her medication had not touched her. It had whatever information animals absorb about what's in their future, like whatever they're intuitive about. She was keyed in. That adrenaline was on.
Yeah. So she knew your game, sister.
She did. Mm-hmm. She did. I was putting off some signals I didn't even know. Yeah. And so we get in the car. We're dropping her off before we go to school. She barks the whole way to the vet. And then she gets in there and she barks the whole time waiting for the vet tech to come take her back. And so by the time I go get back in the car, I told Alex, I said, that is no way to start a morning. That is no way to start a Wednesday. Mm-mm. Anyway, about mid-morning, the vet called me and he said that they had, in fact, sedated her in order to examine her because she is not easily tranquilized.
Yes.
And which I had given them permission to do ahead of time because I felt like, based on the barking, I felt like I knew what they were going to be up against with her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they had examined her. And so he explains what's going on with her skin and how he can treat that. And it's very treatable and fine. And then he said that actually the problem was not Hazel's paw. It was her knee. And that Hazel has a partially torn ACL.
Oh, no. No. I can't.
And so,
oh no!
At that point, I picture every cheerleader I've ever known who had a partially torn ACL. He just put a brace on, you know. Yes. And then I was kind of like, "Wait, dogs have ACLs? Who knew? I didn't know. I didn't know that dogs pull, you know, their anterior cruciate ligament or whatever their it
knee.
Is.
Yeah, they have a knee.
Yeah, they do. I'd never really thought much about Hazel's knees.
Yeah,
so."
Yeah.
So he says, but it's just partially torn. It's not fully torn. Mm-hmm. And you want to keep her from tearing it or it will require surgery.
Oh.
Yeah. Which at that point, I feel like we would be the only people on the planet who have ever had to get knee surgery for their dog. I feel like at that point, we're going to be on the news. Like, anyway. Mm-hmm. So he says, so we're going to do a steroid to reduce the inflammation. And then she needs to really be pretty immobile for the next 4 weeks.
Oh, sure. Uh-huh. Sure.
Mm-hmm. She can't jump. No. She can't run. She only needs to go on very short walks.
And you said, doctor, I'm going to need some more of those sedatives for Hazel and for myself. And
I said, I don't know if you've picked up on this, but
she's high strung.
Hazel's a little high strung, but she can't be on sedatives all the time because then she won't feel. I mean, it's the age old dilemma, right? Like,
that's what I tell myself every day.
She can't be on sedatives all the time or she won't feel her own pain and won't know to protect her knee.
What is one to do?
So of course last night when we got home or yesterday afternoon when we got home, I mean, she was so groggy from being sedated so that she could just have an examination at the vet.
Yeah.
And, so they could do an x-ray and, you know, too, as I'm telling you everything that she's had done, it's all super cheap. It's very affordable.
Every time we leave the vet, I think this really makes a lot of sense to pay this kind of money for animals. I mean, you never walk out of there with like a $50 copay.
No. So, and listen, we love her. And I told the vet that. I said, we love her and we want to do what we do.
Yeah.
Gosh, she's not easy. She is not easy.
No.
And.
Oh, well, you know, okay. So it's funny that you've brought this up because just yesterday, so it's been really pretty here in the afternoons. And so I guess it was like two afternoons ago, Perry and I were sitting out on the back patio after he'd come home from work. And we were just kind of sitting out there hanging out. And, you know, we have an open fence, not an open fence, but you can see through our fence. It's like a I don't know, cattle panel fence. And so the dogs, especially Mabel, just go. I can't say that. They just go. Oh, beep. I was going to, listen, I'm going to tell you the word I was going to opt to leave out was crazy. Like that made it okay. What on earth? I don't even care if you leave that in. Anyway. Beep. But anyway, Mabel goes crazy. They go nuts. She runs up and down the fence. This invariably leads to that at some point she and Piper get tangled up in like a huge dog fight because it's just Mabel bumps into Piper. And so these poor people are walking by and then our dogs are like dog fighting. It's like, rawr! And it's so embarrassing. And I looked at Perry and I said, I love these dogs. You know I do. I said, they're my favorite dogs of any dogs that we've ever had. But when these dogs are gone, we're going to have to get some dogs for our next dogs. I said, like, we're going to be too old to have energy for blue Lacy's. I said, at that point, God willing, I said, we'll be like in our mid to late 50s and we're going to be too old to manage all this. And he was like, what do you think you want? And I had happened to see it on the internet and I didn't even know it was a thing, but there is a dog called a Bassatoodle. And I said, I want a Bassatoodle is what I want for my next dog.
With oodle at the end.
Anything with an oodle, because that's barely a real dog. It's just like a living teddy bear in your house. And I'm like, that's what I want. I want that dog that when people come over, it just rolls over and shows you its tummy, that people can walk in your backyard or walk by your backyard without feeling like they're being accosted. That is the kind of dog I want for my next dog.
Yeah, I said the same thing to David last weekend. I said, whenever that might be, the end of our time with Hazel is here, I want a golden doodle.
Yes.
Or I want something that I can put in my purse.
Yes.
Like I want to be that person who carries her dog around.
Yes.
Like who takes her dog to the ball game. Like I cannot endure the high anxiety breed of dog in
Totally agree that I'm in the same spot. And listen, I adore Mabel. I love her. She cracks me up on a regular basis and she's so cuddly and snuggly. And I love that about her, but she is full on psychopath. I mean, like, and so I can't.
Listen, you get Hazel and Mabel in the same room.
No.
You got a made for TV movie is what you got. You got.
I mean, good night. I'm telling you, it is something else. I mean, we had Caroline rode to her soccer game with a family, I guess, last week sometime. And when they dropped her off, the husband, he like kind of walked up and the dogs were at the fence and they're kind of standing there. And he's like, oh my gosh, those are beautiful dogs. He's like, what are they? And I mean, he takes one step on the curb and they're like, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I'm so embarrassed. Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry. But I was like, yeah, they're not friendly. I was like, don't even acknowledge them. They're not nice. And I feel bad for them, but they don't have good social skills.
Right. Same.
Yeah.
So, okay. Hazel has a partially torn ACL.
We will keep her and you in our prayers.
Thank you. So we've got to somehow keep her. He said, I mean, I'm not saying you have to crate her all the time.
Yeah.
I thought, And you know, we do crate her when we leave the house. She likes, she loves her crate when we leave the house, but, so we've got to keep her somehow calm.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's too bad she doesn't have like a little doggy bike or elliptical where she could work out that knee and her frustration while not putting too much pressure on it, you know?
Right. Yeah, I know. Just if we just get her a little pool, just a little high, one of those pools people use in rehab, that would be awesome.
You know, when we visited the A&M vet school last summer, because Caroline thinks that may be what she eventually wants to do, we went and visited, and they had like a little water, like hydrotherapy room for the animals, and they had, I kid you not, like little bitty teeny tiny cat life jackets that they put on the cats before they put them in that little hydrotherapy pool.
Yeah, that's what... That's how they exercise Bully, the mascot at State. Okay. That's how they exercise him. It's when one of those little, he gets on a little treadmill and those little hydro things.
But I mean, I would just getting the life jacket on the cat feels like a feat in itself. But then putting that cat in the water, I'm like, I don't know about that. I don't know how I feel about that. I know how the cat feels about it. I don't know.
And I would, if that were me trying to get that life jacket on that cat, it would end badly. I feel like
For you or the cat? It makes me
for me. I feel like,
you know that episode of Friends where Rachel gets the hairless cat, remember? And she's like, I hear it. It says Rachel. Rachel. That's what I Gully had a cat like that right after college. She moved to Austin and she ended up adopting what I'm pretty sure was a feral kitten, and it lived in her apartment, and I hated to go visit her because that cat was so awful and it would just attack you. Like you would just be walking by it. Rare. It was,
I feel like we all have a cat we regret in our past. I took on a cat when I was in grad school that I named Prissy and, Prissy.
Yeah.
Oh, she was,
yeah,
she would, it was, I can't even. So yeah. Anyway, so that's our latest with okay. Hazel.
Is oh, I'm she so sorry.
Is supposed to be relatively immobile. And, we hope that her injury won't get in her way when she, starts the Olympic trials in a couple of years.
When she decides to further pursue her track career. I hope that that'll work out for her.
Also, this is not related to our topic for the day, but the other thing I wanted to say is that today you sent me a little bit of a fashion tip.
Yes, I did.
And about Loft. And I have told 4 people that they need to go look at Loft online, that they won't even believe it.
I know.
Right.
Loft,
now,
I'm telling
how cute the stuff
it's
is.
It's like I told you, it's like they're having a renaissance. I feel like I went in there 3 or 4 years ago and was like, I think I'm done with Loft. There's nothing in here for me. Mm-hmm. I really feel like the last time I went in there was when I was still working like in a corporate job. So I had to have like work clothes because it was a good work clothes for like a reasonable price. But then I was like, they don't have anything sorry, that was my phone. I was like, they don't have anything that fits my current lifestyle, which is yoga pants and workout stuff for the most part. But all of a sudden, they've got the cutest stuff.
Well, really, I told 4 friends about it today. And it's all very like colorful and feminine because as I remember Loft, and I have not shopped in there in a while, everything was gray and olive and beige.
Yes.
Like it was just sort of plain, nothing, I mean, fine clothes, but nothing that was really fun. Mm-hmm. But I ordered 2 pairs of shorts and a sweater and a really cute t-shirt. And I'm just as tickled as I can
be. Well, I can't wait to hear how it all turns out. The other thing about Loft is that I've noticed, because I have started looking at them for Fashion Friday stuff, because there have been a couple of things, but it feels like it's getting better and better. And what I have noticed is they always have some sort of sale going. So like today is like 30% off tops and sweaters, but sometimes, I mean, they'll do like a flash sale, like that you'll get on email. And it's like for the next like 12 hours, 50% off and free shipping on everything. And so
I put my email address in today on the little front page and I got 40%. No, that's not true. I got $25 off if I ordered $100 more. So, and free shipping. Mm-hmm.
I think that's a great deal. I think they have a lot of really cute stuff. And what I tend to like about them is their stuff fits. They make their stuff for real women. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like they don't, you know, some places where just your size, the sizes are all screwed up, but I feel like you can count on their sizing to be true and if not a little generous. And so I just like the whole thing and it's nothing's too short. And then they offer shorts in like good lengths, you know, not just shorter shorts, but they offer a longer short.
Yeah. I saw a lot of 5-inch inseam. I saw some 8-inch inseam but their Bermuda shorts are not like long to your knees Bermuda. So like they're a really cute length. And they also, they have plus sizes now, which they did not used to have. And I told a friend about that today. I was like, you wouldn't even believe like all the cute summer skirts and all that sort of stuff that they have. So I was really carried away.
I know. Them. Well, I really want to order those pants that I originally sent you. That's kind of what I think they're so cute. So I'm keeping my eye, but I'm waiting because I know they'll go on sale.
True, they will. And I this is the time of year where I get a little trigger happy about shorts because I can't wear shorts during the school year. But I really, especially last summer, like I really enjoyed my shorts. And so I knew what I needed short wise. And so I went ahead and got them today.
Yeah, I think that shorts, I mean, because here's the thing. When you live in Alabama and Texas, I mean, you can't get through the summer without shorts. I mean, I'm just saying shorts are an inevitable part of life when you live in the South.
Yes, yes.
You do.
You have to make your peace with it. So, or with a cute skirt. And they have a lot of cute summer skirts. There's one kind of navy and white little wrap skirt that's got a scalloped hem that I may have to go back and get. Like, I think I may regret it if I don't.
Well, then
get
you
it.
Don't. So I'm going to tell you, fashion regret is one of the worst kinds of regret. Ask me about the Sam Edelman Camellia boots. So, it's the worst kind of regret when you think, if only I would have.
Mm-hmm. Wake up in a cold sweat at night and think about those Camellia boots.
Could have been.
It's terrible.
What could have been? So anyway.
Okay, so we talked about a couple of episodes ago, and then in this past episode, that we were going to take some time to talk about maybe the five pieces of pop culture that had influenced us the most. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I do remember. Yeah, I do.
Okay. Well, I'm going to tell you that I had a hard time. I really did kind of narrowing it down because I was like, well, there's music and then there's movies and then there's television. I mean, we can go in a lot of directions. And so I just did my best. And then I have a couple of runners up, I think.
See, now I felt like I thought we were sticking to just television. So I felt like in my mind, I've only thought about television, but I can go any way the wind blows on this deal.
Mine are mostly television, I will say. And then I just have, my runners up are, are all music.
Right. Yes, that's fair. That is fair.
Okay. So here's my first one.
What? I can't wait.
It's the Carol Burnett Show.
Oh, that is a good one. I didn't even think about that. Okay. I like that.
The Carol Burnett Show really was on my whole early childhood. I mean, I think it started before I was even born. And so I have a lot of memories of Friday nights Saturday nights watching Carol Burnett. My daddy always officiated football games in the fall. And so a lot of times on Saturday nights, daddy would be calling a junior college game somewhere and mama and I would be home by ourselves. And that's when she would wash my hair for church and all that kind of stuff. And I can remember her turning on the Carol Burnett Show. And we would laugh. I mean, and I was really, I was 4, 5, 6 years old, and we would laugh so hard. And then as I got older, it would come on TBS. They had like the Carol Burnett Show, like the highlights that would come on at 6 o'clock. And we would all watch that. Mom and daddy and I would all watch that because my brother and sister they were, you know, college on with their lives at that point. And so I don't know. I think because she was so smart and it was really genuinely so funny. I mean, it was so clever and I don't know. It was the first time I think that I learned by watching something how much I love to laugh.
I love that.
Mm-hmm. So I think Carol Burnett Show, huge influence on me in terms of what I value entertainment wise.
Okay. I really like that. Okay. So if we're going chronologically, I tried to start and think about it because here's what I remember watching vividly. I remember the Sonny and Cher show.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yes, ma'am.
I thought Cher was the most glamorous thing I'd ever seen.
Yes.
And the Donnie and Marie show because I was so in love with Donny Osmond, you know. And I was probably 4, but to me, the most pivotal, like what I have to say from that time frame that was must-see television for me was Little House on the Prairie.
Oh,
it really was. I know. And it probably wasn't for you because the air conditioning and the lack of and all that.
Yeah. I mean, I watched it every once in a while, but by and large, pioneer life has never really appealed to me.
No, I am aware.
But I did watch it sometimes. I did watch it occasionally. Like I knew who Nellie Olson was and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I knew Pa, like I knew that. And the reruns used to come on somewhere too after it was off the air.
Yes.
But I probably didn't watch it as much as you did. Okay, so we had some sound issues, but now we're back to talk about Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah, so we were at Little House on the Prairie. I just think for me, it was such a, I don't know what it was. I was just fascinated. I mean, I am so not a person who was cut out for any kind of pioneer life, but I was just fascinated by the storylines. I loved Laura Ingalls. I admired her. I liked the show. I liked the drama. I liked the whole thing of it. I loved Pa and the family mm-hmm. and just, and Nellie Olson being terrible and mm-hmm. just the whole thing. The whole, I mean, that's what I remember reenacting. I remember playing Little okay. House on the Prairie. It was part of my, it was a defining part of my childhood.
Hey, everybody. You know, Melanie and I both love it when we discover companies that solve a really pesky task or problem that we all face. And one that I tried recently called Simple Contacts is a total game changer for anyone who wears contact lenses. Now, if you wear contacts, then you know how annoying it is to have to get a prescription just to be able to buy more contacts. And if you're like me, you always seem to run out of contact lenses right before a big event like a vacation or a wedding. Well, Simple Contacts is changing all of that by using technology to make renewing your prescription and buying contact lenses super simple. Here's how it works. Using your phone or computer, you can take the Simple Contacts vision test in 5 minutes from literally anywhere. A real doctor will review your test in 24 hours and then writes you a new prescription. And then boom, a fresh supply of your brand of lenses is on its way to your door. No more appointments, no more waiting rooms. Simple Contacts brings the doctor's office to wherever you are, wherever you need it. And if you have an unexpired prescription, just upload a photo of it or your doctor's info and order your lenses in minutes for a great price. They do all the hard work for you. I recently tried Simple Contacts for the first time, and y'all, it really is as simple as I have said. I put my information in on their website. I stood 10 feet away from my computer to do a quick vision test. I selected the kinds of contacts that I wear. And within 24 hours after a doctor approved my test, my lenses were on their way. Simple Contacts offers every brand of lenses and their prices are unbeatable. The prescription is just $20. The contact lens prices are super competitive and shipping is free. Best of all, our listeners get $30 off their first Simple Contacts order. To save $30 on your lenses, just go to simplecontacts.com/bigboo or enter the code BIGBOO at checkout. Now, I want to mention that this is not a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam. I absolutely get those. You still need them, but this is the most convenient way to renew a prescription and reorder your contacts if your vision hasn't changed. Again, check out Simple Contacts and get $30 off by going to simplecontacts.com/BIGBOO or just enter the code BIGBOO at checkout. Give it a try and you will thank us later. This may be telling, but I do not ever remember playing Little House on the Prairie. You know what I remember? What I remember playing?
One Miss Day America? At a Time. Oh, no. Oh, that was another uh-huh. one. Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, you were a lot cooler than me.
Well, we played Miss America for sure. Maybe that mm-hmm. more than anything, but for sure One Day at a Time. And I always wanted to be Valerie Bertinelli. Like I always wanted to be her.
No question. I mean, Valerie Bertinelli, I don't know that there was more of an it girl in the late 70s, mm-hmm. early 80s than Valerie Bertinelli.
And you know, like looking back, and I've said this before, I was the third child. I came along unexpectedly 10 years after the previous two children. So my parents had zero concern about what I watched on television.
Yeah.
Listen, they were not at all concerned about just turn it on. So I watched everything on Sunday nights. And we went from 60 Minutes to All in the Family to mm-hmm. Alice. To One Day at a Time, to Trapper John, MD. Like, we watched everything on Sunday nights. Yeah. And so that was maybe the Jeffersons. We watched the Jeffersons.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love the Jeffersons.
I did too. So my One Day at a Time preoccupation, I think, came from just repeated Sunday night viewings with my parents.
Yes. But I think that, too, it was such a different time because at that point, you did not have Nickelodeon. There wasn't like children. There was just TV programming. You know what I mean? Like right. there might have been some after school specials. There was like maybe PBS during the daytime. But like once it was prime time, I mean, it was all bets are off. I mean, I don't know what I thought all those people on the Love Boat were doing after they met each other on the Lido deck and went to a room, but it wasn't anything that a 7-year-old probably should have been processing. You know what I mean?
It's like what I thought about the fantasy suite up until I was about 37, which was just what they were. They're just visiting. Like
they're just talking. Oh, good night. Yes, that's
obviously.
Yes. I mean, I did not know. I think your mind just takes in what you can comprehend. And so that was, you know, I just thought the Love Boat, I thought Gopher was funny and Isaac was real charming and I wanted to be Julie. So there you go.
Now we used to play Love Boat too. We used to love somebody to get a clipboard and be a cruise director. That was big fun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Julie McCoy. I wonder
if little kids still play TV shows like we did.
I don't know. I mean, do they watch TV shows like we did? I mean, not.
I think they watch YouTube and Netflix.
Yes.
I mean, not that there aren't TV shows on Netflix, but I think that they're more likely now to make a video for YouTube.
Yes.
Like they're going to create some original content. They're not going to just mimic what they've seen. I don't think, but I don't know. I don't have small kids, but I just.
No.
I don't think of kids doing that so much.
No. Well, and I think now it goes back to that there's not a lot of primetime shows that you're probably letting little kids watch for the most part.
Right.
You know, I mean, maybe there are a lot of sitcoms and we just don't watch them, but I don't know what you watch. And because of Netflix, I think society, from the dawn of time, society has gathered around for story time. But I think what has happened is... But we can all create our own unique experience now where what one family is watching is not what another family is watching because we have Netflix.
Right. Right. Right.
So
you're right.
That's what I'm saying. It's different. Because it's I think every different. Now and then a show like Stranger Things to me came along and I felt like everybody Caroline's age was watching Stranger Things, you know, but those only come around every now and then.
I agree. So I don't know. It's like I think about what Alex and his friends, how they played when he was younger. And I guess, they were very much into superheroes and all that kind of stuff. But he certainly was not watching the stuff that I watch. He was not reenacting the Real Housewives of New York because I'd let him sit around and watch.
No. So. Oh, can you imagine? No, they didn't know.
No, still, if I'm watching it and he walks in the room, I pause it. Like, I don't. Mm-mm. Mm-mm. No.
Kids today don't know how to let their Barbies go over to the wet bar to pour some whiskey out of a decanter because they've seen it on Dallas.
That's right. That's right. They don't know how to pretend to be Sue Ellen.
That's
they don't.
Right. That's right. They don't know that maybe somebody shot Ken and we're trying to figure out who it is.
Nope. It was a simpler time.
No,
it was a simpler time.
It was.
Okay, here's my second thing for pop culture.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. My second thing for pop culture that maybe I'm not going to go in complete chronological order because I'm going to go in the order that I saw these things.
Okay. That's fair.
So, my second thing was Late Night with David Letterman.
Okay. All right. So I would agree with that, but that like college years, is that when you really watched it or high school?
No, I was pretty much watching in junior high. Okay. No, really high school. It was really high school. But I mean, from the time it started, I watched it again, youngest child by a lot. Nobody cared when I went to bed.
Yes.
And so, I would stay up and I would watch David Letterman. And I can remember thinking when I was I probably started watching in 10th grade. So I can remember thinking, you know, it was so sarcastic. It was so random. And like, it just delighted me. And so I think that even now, like, I don't know. Have you watched David Letterman's show on Netflix, his interview show he's been doing?
I have not. No, I have not.
Okay. Well, it's just like, it's a 1-hour interview that he does with some celebrity. And it's really interesting, but I like even now there's something about his sense of humor that is just, it's so appealing to me because it's smart. It's just a tiny bit irreverent. or I guess maybe not irreverent. That might not be the right word, but it's not, it's just, I guess it's sarcasm. Yeah. And then I don't know. I just, I didn't watch him much at all as an adult, but when I was in high school, that was something else. I just loved it.
Okay. See, I wasn't allowed to be up that late in high school.
Right. Oldest child.
So mm-hmm. I wasn't allowed to be up that late. I remember it was a really big deal because like by my junior or senior year in high school, I would stay up late at night, which late was like from 10 to 10:30. And I would watch Cheers reruns were on. And I loved my Cheers reruns. But that was a big thing to get to. Yes. To get to stay up till 10:30. So, which now I feel like Caroline's up till 10:30 every night. But I guess maybe that's only child. I don't know.
Well, I can remember being honestly, I can't remember a time when really I had to go to bed. I can remember staying up into the wee hours of the morning reading Nancy Drew books, like when I was in third grade. Okay.
And it pays to have older parents because they're so tired.
They were exhausted. And then I would stay up. I would watch Columbo reruns when I got a little bit older, like in junior high, or I would watch Charlie's Angels reruns when I was in junior high. Uh-huh. And then by the time I was in high school, it was David Letterman. Okay. Not that I always stayed up super late, but I don't know. There was not a lot of monitoring of my television habits. So.
Well, so you, anyway. We're just going to confirm that you were so much cooler than me, because the next one I had on my list that was really pivotal for me was Happy Days.
Happy Days.
All of mine are like, oh, but I Happy Days on a lot of levels, because I loved the Fonz. He epitomized what was cool to me. Right. I loved the Cunningham family. I loved that whole thing. Yeah. I loved Joni and Chachi. That was like to me. Well, Laura and Almanzo too. But then I think I always liked a love story, even from a young age. I liked a love story. I loved when Laura and Almanzo got together. When Joni and Chachi finally got together, I liked the love story. And Fonzie and Pinky Tuscadero, for that matter. I just liked a good...
Pinky Tuscadero.
Yes. And when Richie and Lori Beth got married over the phone, because he was stationed somewhere, and I just... All of it. I loved... That was... Happy Days was another pivotal show for me that I just loved. It was must-see TV.
See, I think the show if I had to pick a nostalgic show that's kind of an awe for me, it's The Brady Bunch, because I watched the reruns every afternoon from the time I was probably in third or fourth grade, honestly, until I graduated from high school. Like I never fell out of love with The Brady Bunch. There was something about it I just loved. But Happy Days, I did not watch as much, but I did watch it. I mean, I just was not super into it, but I did watch it. So there's a certain sweetness to the things that you love.
Yes, I did.
And
a certain sarcasm, which really you would almost think it would be the reverse for us. So I'm shocked.
You would.
But
I know.
Maybe that was later. I got darker as I got older.
I don't think either one of us is really sentimental.
Yeah. I got darker as I got older.
I think probably now I'm maybe a smidge less skeptical than you are.
Yes, I would agree with that. I do think that's accurate.
But you were covered in hope as a child.
I was covered in hope. And I also think, but just because my childhood was a little tumultuous a lot of times, I think I really liked the harmony of those shows. It felt very peaceful to me. I liked Happy. I didn't like a problem. I would get stressed out. You know what I mean? It's also why I really like Dukes of Hazzard. It was like, I just like a good, simple, we have solved the problem. Uncle Jesse has solved the problem. Daisy and the Duke boys have chased down the counterfeiter at the county line. And Boss Hogg has to congratulate them and let them out of prison, even though he didn't want to. I just like a good, that was what I liked.
But you know, that makes total sense though, because I had zero change in my childhood. I had zero upheaval in my childhood. So for me, it was like, I would watch stuff where it was a little sarcastic or it was a little edgy and I'd be like, ooh, like,
what is it?
You know what I mean? Like that was an escape for me. What is this world where people are sort of snarky?
Yes.
I mean, like it was delightful to me.
It was a change of pace.
Yeah. That makes sense actually.
So there you have it.
Okay, so far I've had Saturday Night Live and Letterman. You have had
Carol Burnett.
Little House
on the Prairie. Burnett.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Sorry. Kira Burnett Letterman. This is my next one. It's Saturday Night Live.
Okay. So Saturday Night Live for you. When do you think you started watching it?
Honestly,
as a 4-year-old,
I was okay. five. Yeah. Seriously. I was okay. five. Mm-hmm. Because I had a sister in college and I had a brother in high school. So when they watched, like, I remember watching the whole like Landshark thing really when it was on television. I remember watching Roseanne and Dana really when it was on television, like not clips that I saw way down the road, but actually as it happened, I watched. So for my whole life, I've watched Saturday Night Live. I mean, ever since I was a little kid.
So pretty much, because it started when, in 1976? Isn't that when it first came on?
70 or 75, maybe. Let's see. So Saturday Night Live premiere, 1975. Okay. And it started on October 11th, 1975.
Okay.
So I can't remember not watching it. I maybe in the last few years, we always DVR it. Sometimes I watch it, sometimes I don't. But like, and then when I was in high school and it was stuff like Sweeney Sisters.
Come on. Well, that's what I was going to say, because I remember being little and I remember hearing my dad talk about like Landshark and Roseanne, Dana. Like, you know, you knew those that were like pervasive in pop culture. You know what I mean? Like, so I was always aware of it. I wasn't necessarily allowed to stay up and watch it. But.
Well, yes, we've established
a different set of rules, I'm going to go on record here and say, I don't think that it was that my parents were so strict as much as they just wanted me to go to bed. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think they just were like, I was real dramatic at nighttime. And so I feel for them now in hindsight, realizing that they probably tried to put me down to bed at 8 and like at 11, I was still getting back up saying, I can't see, I need a drink of water. I mean, I was a terrible bedtime person. Now I know it's because I'm a night owl. So they shouldn't have been trying to put me to bed so early. But
Right.
When I remember watching it was like, I guess that would have been high school that coincided with like Eddie Murphy and Joe Piscopo and like all those years is to me when I really got into Saturday Night Live and then watched it from there on out.
Yes, I remember those years too. I loved those years when we were when Eddie Murphy was on and all that. So again, I even as a child, drawn to something a little sarcastic, a little satire. I love me some satire. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. So I think it has, whoever has been on that show has all, that those people have always shaped my sense of humor and what I think is funny. So, and it's funny because now Alex is the same way. He knows all the cast members' names. He does not watch it on Saturday night because he actually goes to bed like a 15-year-old should. But he will watch it with us when we watch it, or I have the app on my iPad. You know, I mean, like,
okay.
I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. And see, like Caroline, we never watch it anymore. And so Caroline, I think, will watch something every now and then that if she hears people at school talking about it or whatever, but it is not part of our normal routine. So.
Okay. So what's your next one?
My next one, if I had to go and see, maybe this is where it all turned, but the first like grown-up show I remember watching that I loved of its own merit and not just because it was on a Friday night at my grandparents' house and we all watched it, which would be like Dallas and Dynasty and all those, is Moonlighting.
Okay.
Right? I mean, that was a pivotal swing in television to me.
Yes. We have hit on our common ground. Yes. This is the tie that binds besides Jesus.
Like, that's right.
That show, and I even now, like, I'll go back and I'll look something like a Moonlighting something up on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And like, I feel like I have to hold my chest when I see it. I loved it so. I love that show so much. I don't know if I've ever loved a show as much as I love that one.
No, it was so good. And it was, I mean, and towards the end, it kind of got, it wasn't nearly as good. But those first couple of seasons of just, they were Bruce Willis and, I mean, their chemistry, and it was funny and it was smart. And it was the first show that I was like, it was the first show where I was like, oh, this is a well-written show. And I don't think that at the time I said, this is a really well-written show, but it just had everything. It just had all the chemistry and the writing and the jokes. And they were the first show, which now you think is like a precursor to The Office and all those, where they like broke the camera and they would actually look at the camera. You know, they would actually look at the audience. Like the whole thing about it was just so smart. I felt like that was a turning point in TV.
Well, and here's the thing about Moonlighting. Like, and I would say it was the same for me. It was the first sort of grown-up show that I owned. I like this show. My parents don't necessarily like it, but I like this show. Mm-hmm. The dialogue was so fast and so funny. It was so creative. Like the stuff they did in retrospect was, they were, you know, how they would do like the Shakespeare episodes and all that kind of stuff. It was so clever. But I may have told you this before, but I would drive every Monday to, and remember we got our driver's licenses in Mississippi at the time when we were 15.
Yes.
I would leave school every Monday when the new TV guide would come out, and I would drive down to Brown's newsstand in my hometown to buy a copy of TV Guide to see what was going to happen on Moonlighting the next week, because it came out a week ahead of time. So I would know like Maddie and David do this or Maddie and David do that. But here's the thing. When Maddie and David finally acknowledged their romance or their attraction to one another, it really did. It killed it.
Yeah, it did. It did. And that's a shame. I don't know why that is, but it did. But from that point on, it wasn't as good. And I don't know if it's just because it's all the anticipation, or if the writing just wasn't as good from that point on, but it killed it.
Well, do you remember though, that was when, like right before that happened, she got pregnant in real life. Oh, and so they started having to camouflage her like 1,000 different ways.
That's right.
I'm not saying that that's what killed it. I'm just saying, like, so there was all that drama going on off screen.
Yes.
And then when they finally got together, like the thing that was so good about them, like it was the tender moments were the best.
Yes.
And then when they finally acknowledged that they cared about one another, there was nothing, it was kind of mean. There was nothing tender about it. And like they lost it.
Yeah.
They lost sort of the thing that was so appealing about them.
Yeah.
But I will never forget one time I had been to a high school baseball game, and I came home and I had recorded Moonlighting on the VCR.
Yes. Yes. I was going to say that was the show. That was the show that led me to learn how to record things on the VCR was Moonlighting.
Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. And there was an episode where David was wrongly accused of something and he had to go on the run.
Yes.
And Maddie ended up meeting him in a parking garage to kind of see what was going on. And he kissed her. Do you remember this?
I do. I had forgotten it, but now that you're saying it, I totally remember it.
It was, it was just one of those. It was just one of those like TV moments where it was kind of like, okay,
yes,
maybe I am overly invested in these people.
Yes.
Yes. Maybe I need to remind myself that they're not real.
Yeah.
Maybe I was so happy for them.
I know.
They were pretend people, but I was so happy for them.
Yep. I totally remember that. I was so invested in their relationship. Like I wanted them to, they were one of those, the first, like where I wanted them to be together in real life. I wanted, you know, mm-hmm. like the whole thing. I just thought they were so great. And I just loved the whole show to me was a revelation.
Uh-huh. Mrs. DePesto.
Yes. Agnes DePesto. Yes. And it had great supporting characters too. That was the whole thing it was a great show.
I know. I loved it. Now I'm going to want to get on YouTube later and watch.
I know. Me too. I was just old thinking scenes. That. I know. I was just sitting here thinking that. It was so good.
Okay. So that would be my four as well as your four.
Okay. That was my third, I think.
Okay. That was your third. Okay. That would be my four. Okay. So here's my five.
Okay.
Is, and this is a strange one. I know, but my five is All the President's Men with Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman.
We took a sharp turn there. Okay.
We really did take a sharp turn. But here's the thing. I've always liked some, or I didn't know it, but that movie confirmed to me that I enjoy some government intrigue. It has foreshadowed my current deep involvement in the Russia investigation.
Yes.
But that was when I think I learned that I love things that have to do with the CIA and the FBI. And I was so fascinated by the Washington Post and that whole story. And even now, if you present me a story where there is a reporter, there is a scandal, and there is a government agency, I am all in with you. I will, I, I, I will watch that thing all day long. You put the seal of the president on the cover of your book or on your movie poster, and I am all in with you.
I was going to say, I think you're just talking about the nightly news at this point. I mean,
well, as you know, I mean, but I think that's one reason, though, why I have been so, maybe the right word is entrenched in the news for the last 18 months or so, really 2 years, is because you couldn't script it, but it's got element. There are elements to it where I like, it reminds me of something that I would, if it were a television show, I would watch it, is what I'm telling you.
Yes. Yes. I get it. I get it. Well, you think there will be movies made about this time, this point in time someday?
No doubt. No doubt. Anyway, so All the President's Men, I loved. I saw it, I think, when I was a teenager when I saw it for the first time. But I loved it initially, and it's one of those movies I could watch it over and over and over and over. I think it's why I like The Post so much, is because I just love that notion of a writer who uncovers the truth. And if that truth happens to have some CIA folks and some FBI folks mixed up in it, maybe along with the executive branch of the government, it is endlessly fascinating to me, because it's that whole tension between truth and power. And so it's, I don't know. I love that movie. And so that's one of the big ones for me. Like, what about you?
All right. My last one is another TV show, and it's going to be one that everybody's going to be like, oh, of course, including you, which is Friends. Friends to me was, if there's a show, it's the one that I can watch infinite amount of times. I never get tired of it. It has aged so well, because even now if I turn it on, like, it still makes me laugh. And it was such it was the timeline, because Friends started right after I'd graduated from college. So I felt like Rachel had Emma, like, right after I had Caroline. So it was like I went through all the stages of, like, life with the Friends characters. So I related to it so much. I loved their friendships. I felt like that was the first, like, ensemble cast that we saw where they were all really, like, good to each other and friends. And just, I just loved it. I loved the way it made me laugh. I loved the smart writing. I loved it. I mean, there's so many things that I feel like we still say all the time, like in pop culture, or the way we phrase things, that I'm like, that's a Chandler Bing, or that's a Rachel. You know, like, it's just, it's pervasive. And I just love that show.
I feel like we reference it at least once a day in our house. It's the, it's sort of the Gen X. I think for Gen X people like us, it's sort of the touchstone. It's the comedy touchstone for our age group. I mean, Chandler Bing, we could sit here for an hour and just throw references back and forth.
Yeah. He's our lobster. You know? Yeah. And you know, he's our lobster. That's, it's the whole, there was just so much about it. And, like, just the Ross and Rachel thing, and then Monica and Rachel's friendship, and the guys, and just, I just love that show. I still do to this day.
Okay. Well, we may have to revisit this topic, because we didn't even get into music, but it's fun.
Yeah. I know. We're going to have a part two, I think.
I think so, too, because we have not talked about 16 Candles, and I don't know how we talk about anything like this without talking about 16 Candles.
No, and The Breakfast Club, and basically every John Hughes movie that was ever made. So we're going to have to come back around.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, so we will continue this conversation, but as always, we are grateful that y'all stuck around with us. We'll be back eventually at some point.
Okay.
I don't want to create false expectation.
No.
We're doing fine right now. We're being kind of consistent. You never know when the sucker, like, will take a nosedive. So you gotta be as optimistic as possible.
Enjoy it while you can.
That's right. Okay. Well, we'll talk to y'all later.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.